Doc hadn't felt an attraction to any woman since Lori Quint's untimely demise, but this one was different. Where Lori had been headstrong and pumped with a self-aggrandizement of youth, this woman was mature and cautious. Doc liked that, liked the white flash of her smile, and the calm assessment in her dark eyes. Susan Suki Smith, originally from Rice Falls, Wisconsin, had a past as tragic as his own, maybe even more so in terms of loss and heartache. Now she was on her way out west, seeking her sister, in hopes of reclaiming the last remnants of her scattered and mostly dead family. She wore a divided blue skirt with a few patches, over well-worn riding boots, along with a dingy white blouse and a jacket that matched the blue in the skirt. A necklace of rough-cut turquoise and pewter around her long, slender neck completed the ensemble. When they'd first met, she had the advantage on Doc with an auto pistol and a hankering to fire, only to come forward after they'd talked to collapse before him unconscious in a tumble of limbs and bright red blood. He later learned the wound had been given to her by a man who she hired as a guide. In return for her injury, she'd chilled the man with his own blade, and had been going it alone until encountering Doc. The spark of attraction had been there between the two, and Doc had delighted in engaging in a sprawl of days of consensual lovemaking and leisurely travel in some of the most beautiful country he'd ever seen. Now Suki was at his side in front of the Matrans chamber, along with all the other members of Ryan Cotter's group of survivalists. There had been no hesitation in letting her accompany them. If the woman was good enough for Doc, there would be no disputing her place in the group of friends. Although hardened by the harshness of her life, she was friendly enough, although still sticking close to Doc. Like most people at first, she was attempting to grasp the complexities of the matter transfer process. Doc had explained the process to her as best as he could, promising her that he'd spent more time than he cared to tell within the various excited armaglass chambers, jumping to and fro, and he was still in one piece. So she'd agreed and entered with the rest of them, Christy, Jack, Dean, JB, Mildred, the trader, and Abe, both of whom were traveling with the companions at the time, and Doc himself, who felt slightly guilty since none of them actually liked jumping, and he was the one who usually came out on the other end suffering the most. Yet he still had to put on a brave face for his lady. Outside, in the ruin of the anteroom next to the chamber, Ryan had waited until all were safe and seated inside before stepping into the booth himself and closing the door. Once closed, the door triggered the auto mechanism of the Matrans, and the incredible process, so familiar to everyone, began once more. Familiar to all but Suki Smith, who sat stiffly next to Doc, her face a twist of worry as the metal discs began to hum like a thousand stirred bees and the swirling mists fell around their shoulders like a gentle cloak. Gray-white mists that started high before falling to the floor and wrapping around each form inside the chamber. Doc had promised that no harm would come to her, as long as he was alive to be her champion, and Suki had smiled weakly in return. The humming grew louder, and the light of the chamber became brighter, and Doc closed his eyes, hoping he wouldn't dream. And if he did, that Suki would be in whatever mental confabulation his slumbering mind conjured. A simple word, said very clearly and distinctly, came from the woman at his side.
No.
The transitional phase of the Matrans jump was almost complete, and Doc had to struggle to open his eyes to focus on what he'd heard and the implications of the single spoken syllable. Across from Doc and Suki, Ryan saw what was happening, even as he battled to keep his own eye open. JB, his vision dulled by the removal of his specs, also tried to react, but found his body numb and impossibly slow to respond to the mental commands he was issuing. Suki Smith, who'd buried a quartet of husbands during her rough struggle to survive in the Deathlands, who'd endured all the hell an attractive woman faced in a lawless land of cruel men and still managed to retain the capacity to love, who'd encountered a curious older man with a lilt in his voice and the flowery speeches of a true romantic, and for a week of her hard life, bought into the fantasy of being swept off her feet, now stared into the unfathomable face of the unknown and was frightened to death. Fear pumping into her lithe body, she was already up into a crouch and lurching clumsily toward the closed Matrans chamber door. Even as her very atoms were scattered to the four winds on a subatomic level. The future Doc Tanner watched all of this from outside the gateway, saw the door open a crack, saw the world erupt, saw Suki die from the other side. This time, when he felt the tugging of the temporal leash trawling him to yet another locale, he was more than relieved. Doc opened his eyes and realized he was slumped on his feet against the side of a wooden wall. His legs were tingling with needles of pain, and he could barely stand. Flakes of chipped white paint stuck to his jacket and the side of his face as he leaned for support, his presence hidden away by the shelter of an empty doorway, and he struggled to fight back grief for Suki. Grief and guilt that were already intermingling with new emotions, brought on by what he was now viewing from the span of a single muddy street away. For he now saw himself, his wife, his children.
So young. Too young.
There was no stopping the tears now, and his vision blurred and the scene ran like melting paint. The out-of-body experience was taking a great toll physically, but mentally he felt numb. Dead. He wanted to run to them, to grab up Rachel in his arms and spin her in a circle, and never stop holding her. Spin her as she laughed and laughed, like she always did. Like she always had. Until she squealed for him to stop. But he knew there would be no such reunion. For how could he confront himself? Lafeo Tanner, walking down that wooden sidewalk with his wife and children, had no clue, no concept of the disaster soon to befall. And even if he was forewarned, how would it change the future? Then, with the clarity of old, the acute mental sharpness he'd once possessed, he recalled words he'd once read on a monitor screen during his captivity with Operation Kronos. Words that had haunted him greatly with their implication then, and even more so now, as each syllable came rushing back with the fury of a hurricane. Temporal anomalies are not clearly understood, nor easily explained. Evidence is limited, as experiments have not proceeded far or fast. Most experts hypothesize that time is multi-stranded. There is, at any one second, millions upon millions of time possibilities, an infinite choice of parallel futures, any or all of which will persist. Thus, it is believed that the classic example of a person traveling back into the past to alter his own present is false. He will alter only one of the parallel streams, but his own present will not change. He could be killed in the past, but his own time stream will not be sullied by the disturbance. But in one universe, he will cease to exist. That is all that is known.
That is all that is known.
Then, he knew what he had to do. Whether or not the theorists at Kronos were correct in their extrapolation and understanding of how the time stream worked, he still had to warn himself. However, before he could reach his family, he felt his teeth begin to hum, a hum that stretched through his skull and nasal cavity. The chronal transport process was beginning once more. Doc took a single step forward and felt his metabolism start to slow, freezing into place as if his very bones were made of ice and his skin frosted on. He tried to call out, cursing himself now for playing coy and not immediately going up the steps to his own front door and grabbing his young face in his hands and screaming, "It's over, Theo! Everything falls apart! The center cannot hold! For I am you and you are me, and right now, in this reality, we are both separate entities, and by God, you must do all in your power to prevent this Dickens-like apparition that has appeared on your doorstep from coming to pass!" He had done none of these things. Hesitation had cost him dearly once more. When the trawl of the Matrans unit finished locking and sucked him away from that plane of existence, he welcomed the nightmares to come. He hoped for them to never end as eternal punishment. The dark, dangerous visions of the dead.
"We've got 7 seconds.
JB measured out the unstoppable countdown he'd started when setting the fuse on the grenade. His eyes were wide behind the lenses of his wire-rimmed spectacles.
6.
Let's gamble these ugly bastards haven't learned to count.
4.
Well, 2 from JB.
3,
everyone go flat.
2. 1.
Soto, JB, Ryan, Christy, and Dean dove to their knees and stomachs like dropped stones.
They weren't below. got above us somehow.
The vents. The bastards are probably spread all over the redoubt.
Soto was limping from the injury sustained earlier.